Welcome to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com for March 22nd, 2005. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for streaming us or downloading us to your portable player from around the world. And we're now proud to be a member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcasts.com. And we're now a part of the family of other tech shows on this network, amongst Geek News Central podcast and the .NET podcast. Thanks to Todd Cochran for letting us join his great group of shows. So go check him out. And we got Dana on the line, don't we? Dana,
yeah,
you out there somewhere?
I'm here. I'm fascinated to find out that we're part of the Greek network now. Geek, I think.
Geek. Yeah. Geek News Central is a podcast online.
Come back to Athens.
That's right. So, Dana, you're down in L.A. right now. Where exactly are you located at? Or you're driving around, right?
I'm actually sitting in the parking lot of the Manhattan Inn and Suites, which is just an awful-looking hotel. I'm not going to stay here. But, yeah, I'm just south of LAX. I've been here all week. Going to a Boston Legal event panel that's a TV show. And they had that at the Directors Guild of America a few days ago.
So don't give away everything, because we're going to get you talking about all that. And I also wanted to let everybody know that we're also joined by Mitch Radcliffe again. He's a tech analyst and commentator, blogger. And are you now like a CEO too?
I'm a co-founder.
You're a co-founder. Okay. So
I don't go for these
CEO stuff. Okay. Well, Mitch is also a blogger at redherring.com. And has his own web blog at radcliffeblog.com. So anyway, he's going to tell us a whole bunch of cool stuff about things that he's working on that he kind of alluded to last week.
Well, thank you for having me and the opportunity to be here as not a CEO and to yammer about what I'm doing.
Well, thank you for being here. Let's run through some of the topics that we're going to talk about this week. Mitch is going to tell us about his new online link relationship mapping company called Persuadio at mydensity.com. And
we're going to talk about Dana's trip to the William S. Paley Television Festival in Los Angeles, California, a place where you can see James Spader, smell James Spader, and reassess James Spader.
Yes, she did. And one of the last stories we're going to talk about is it possible that Google could be building its own internet operating system?
And I think the answer is
possibly.
No.
No?
No.
Well, don't give away all the secrets,
Mitch.
But
it'll be a conflict for us.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I tend to think that they might be. But anyway, we're kind of jumping ahead here.
Debate society. Resolved.
Yes. Yes.
Google is not building an OS.
And we're also going to talk about some listener emails. Dan wants us a little bit faster in our bit rate with the show here. And Brad decides he likes Mitch after much consideration.
Well, thank you, Brad.
Let's jump into it here. Dana, tell us about your grand experience down in L.A. as you're chasing the Boston Legal crew down there.
Let's recategorize that. I'm not chasing. I'm not stalking. I'm
defending.
Well, now, how many yards away from the crew must you stay?
Must I legally stay? I'm fine. Actually, I came down as press. Mitch, I'm kind of feeling a little like a compadre with you.
Well, I think you deserve to, because you write extensively about Boston Legal and the entire Spader phenomenon.
That's right.
I did just post at my live journal, my Dana live journal, about the event that I went to, which, as you alluded to earlier, was the William S. Paley Television Festival. They have different shows. I think the L Word was on earlier. The other night with the Deadwood, and this was Boston Legal, and I got to watch an episode which will air this weekend, and then the panel came out, which was just about all the cast members except no Candace Bergen. And it's interesting because the three women cast members, Ronna Mitra, Candace Bergen, and Monica Potter, were all filming late, leading to wild speculation of the lesbian scene that they must have been filming because of it, only women in the firm.
But I thought the L Word was a different day.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think that's a lot of wishful thinking on some people's part, right?
Well, it's been a sort of a little running gag, lesbian. But I did get to – people have to go to the boston-legal.org site, and I will have information up and some pictures I took. And an interview with Mark Valley, which was very brief but very nice. He was very gracious.
Dana, I want to ask, having been in close proximity to the entire cast and based on recent comments about – James Spader. How are you feeling about Mr. Spader, having seen him in person?
You know, I think he has a wonderful taste in clothes and shoes. This is actually from, I'm stealing from his acceptance speech when he won the Emmy. That's what he told the audience assembled. Thank you. But, no, he smelled very good. He was extremely witty and dry, dry wit. I can't say that right, can I?
Weedy?
He was not dry because he was the only person that to consume all the water that was given to each of the panelists. No one else sipped anything. I thought that was an interesting trivia moment.
Well, actually, it sounds like
so he bogarted other people's water?
It sounds like he's a fine wine, Dana.
Because he's
bouquet. He's dry and, you know, okay.
But he bogarts people's water.
He does, huh?
He actually didn't drink anybody else's water.
Oh, okay.
He was great. He had a special moment with William Shatner. He was very touchy-feely. He kind of played with Shatner's ear and then caressed
really?
His inner thigh. Yeah. And that was special.
And how did Shatner take it?
Like
Shatner
a man,
was
I'm sure.
Wonderful.
Right?
Did he say, James, stop. Stop.
He did say, Denny, great, in a lovely way.
Did he now?
Yes. You just don't. Shatner is so happy to be on that show. He loves David E. Kelly.
I love David E. Kelly.
There's just too much love going on down there, and too much lap tapping going on, huh?
Betty White, who's in her 80s, was charming and funny, and even talked about how suppositories make her giggle.
Suppositories make me giggle too.
Okay, Denny. Great.
No. Have I rambled
Captain
on enough
Kirk.
About my obsession with Boston Legal?
Spock.
Well, now, were you able to get some really good content for your Boston Legal website? I guess that.
As a matter of fact, the whole panel discussion, which was about an hour, including Q&As, I also asked questions from the audience, will be streamed as an audio thing on boston-legal.org.
Dana, so,
I'll try
that
and transcribe just it too.
Rocks. Oh. Rocks. I just want to thank you. You for coming to see us.
I'm
here.
Telling you, you need to stop the Kirk impersonation because Denny Crane's buried Kirk once and for all. This is his new iconic personality.
No, it can't happen.
So, Dana, you told me kind of your experience down there a little bit as hanging out with the paparazzi. Why don't you tell us a little bit on that whole story that you were hanging out in the line with all of the other photographers? Won't you
breaking news. Yeah. I will tell you, breaking news. The photographers that do it for a living here, that go around take pictures of celebrities as they enter and leave events,
like
are
trials?
Officially stupid and rude. I can totally understand how celebrities disdain them, but unfortunately have to court them as well.
So
they were rude to me.
did you barge in on the Robert Blake trial while you were there?
No,
because he has one of those personas, sort of like Captain Kirk that we all remember too.
Okay.
Remember Fred the Parrot?
That's true. I mean, he wasn't found guilty. But anyway, so you weren't really kind of a stalker kind of fan kind of thing. You're a serious journalist down there looking for stories and a possible relationship with the David E. Kelly organization, aren't you, for your website?
Oh, well, that would be wonderful. No, I was the only person that actually came with a microphone and interviewed. Nobody else interviewed them. They were just taking pictures. So it was nice to get my few minutes of one-on-one time.
Yeah.
I sounded like a complete dork, and Mark Daly was extremely charming and tried to make me at ease. So I'm still a novice, and I think that's why the paparazzi kind of snubbed their noses at me and said, excuse me, I don't know you. I'm not talking to you, when I tried to be friendly to them. I think they're very suspicious of each other.
Well, you know what they say about people who can't take a joke.
Screw them. I know that's a nice way of putting it, isn't it?
It is.
It was quite nice.
Dana, you're actually describing what happened to me the first time, because I was a film critic, and that's how I was my first writing gigs, and I got to interview Isabella Rossellini at the Sundance Film Festival.
Oh.
Right after she did Blue Velvet. I was just stunned to be in close proximity to Isabella Rossellini. And so she was very kind and very nice. So someday you can, you know, be a rude guy like me and actually, you know.
I'm sure you weren't rude.
Go on the radio. I wasn't rude to her. I stammered and my mouth got really dry.
Wow, I can't imagine that.
I have a hard time visualizing that one too, Mitch. Well, Dana, thanks for, you know, calling in and giving us a report on all this.
It was very technology focused, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
It was in such a Spock kind of way.
I want to thank our listeners for just hanging in there while I obsess about my own particular non-technological interest.
Well, no, you're actually doing very cool things on.
You are
on
a blogger
on your Boston Legal website. You know, you're offering high bitrate video streams of segments from the show
and it's not a fan site; it's a news portal.
And that's right.
The show.
The fact is, it isn't even not techie, because what you're talking about is the application of this technology to real ordinary life. I mean, you were standing there with a microphone, and everybody else was just taking pictures.
Well,
you changed the dynamic.
She's also a grassroots journalist, too.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, that's exactly one of the biggest movements that's going on online right now is people like you and I and Mitch are out there creating content. We're not a big publishing or content production company.
So you're saying that presenting myself as a blogger attending these events, you know, another inroad for bloggers to, I guess.
It was only this week that a blogger got a White House press pass.
Wow.
That's right.
So you, or as Shatner would say, you
are a pioneer.
Are pioneering.
I'm happy to do it for all of Hollywood and all of the bloggers.
Well, thank you from all of us.
And I can't wait to come home to Seattle, man.
Yeah, I'll bet. All right. Well, I think you probably want to go find a place to spend the night, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
So you're not going to hang on the phone with us for the whole rest of the show here?
Or? I would love to, but I'm looking for some place that actually has a spare room that has Wi-Fi. Wish me luck. I'm going down to Redondo Beach next. Manhattan Beach is dried up.
So you're going to Skype me tonight, right?
I'll Skype you.
Okay. Well, cool.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm going to be going to my dad's house tonight. So,
hey.
So you may not be able to Skype me tonight.
Okay.
So we're going to have to do it later.
I'll Skype you when I get home.
Oh, okay. All right, Dana.
I really feel like I shouldn't be on the phone.
That's right. This is a real personal conversation here, right?
Cheers, guys.
Well, I had to let you know, right? Okay. Anyway, thanks, Dana.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you later. All right, Mitch. We lost Dana.
We can live a short time without the Dana.
I don't know. This is a rare opportunity. I mean, that you and I just do the show without Dana.
And based on the lead in, Brad may or may not like it.
It's true. Brad's name sure comes up a lot. But anyway, well, Mitch, let's talk about your new venture and what you're working on here. You've got a really cool application that's available online at mydensity.com.
Well, thanks.
Kind of creating mappings of people's link relationships with mm-hmm. their websites, and I think what you've done is you've opened up kind of a Pandora's box of opportunity and view into a whole other way of looking at the web.
And, well, you know, Pandora's box also brought evil, pestilence, and death.
There's a lot of things that when you open up something like this, there's a lot of things that reveal themselves that you probably wouldn't necessarily think would appear.
Now that you put it that way. God, I'd better stop this before
it gets out of hand.
But yeah, well, anyway, I really appreciate you think that it would be that significant that it would be, you know, something that would change the world. But yeah, well, that thank you.
I think that it certainly could. You've given a view to the online world that hasn't existed before.
Well, that's one of the things that this whole thing started about a year ago, when a friend of mine called and he had been flamed by Jeff Jarvis of Buzz Machine, the blog, and he couldn't figure out how to respond or even who Jeff was. And I had to literally sort of draw a map to say, if you piss Jeff off, you piss off these people.
Yeah.
And
do you really want to piss those people off?
Yeah. And it was, you know, as a matter of, in a way, Jeff is like a microphone, and he's a microphone that you're going to speak back through, as well as a guy with a microphone speaking at you, whatever mm-hmm. you like, whether or not you like what he says. So I had to draw a map to make this clear to him. And I started thinking about the fact that we see lots of lists of data and lots of lists of links between different people and people and information and between information. But we mm-hmm. don't see these drawn very effectively. There are some interesting visual representations for search engines, for instance. But what they do is they sort of aggregate stuff into general categories based on the keywords they're picking off mm-hmm. the pages. And what I wanted to do was build an architecture that could do much, much more than that. And we could really start to, you know, take a granular look at the world. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know about you, but almost everybody that I know, and certainly myself, get a lot more out of a quick glance at a map than reading, go down the street, four blocks, turn right. go to the fourth light at 322nd Street, turn left, and go to Barbecue Lane.
Yeah, we like to see kind of like a map or a physical representation of where we want to go. And that's
so
exactly
we built
what you're doing.
Yeah. And that's what we built was an architecture that lets you take lots of different kinds of data, any structured data, and bring it in. And we'll, you know, we can build more capability into that. And then we have a middle layer of this architecture that is an analytical system that lets you do stuff with the data you just collected, like tell me the relationship between two URLs or look for postings about the about Boston Legal and link, you know, show me when they occurred and over time. I mean, we can map a lot of different things. The first thing that we put out there is this thing called MyDensity, which is basically it's a pretty simple tool. You type in your URL, and it gives you a map of the first 2 degrees. That is, all the sites immediately connected to the URL and the sites connected to those, and then all the interrelationships between all of those sites. So you start to see this kind of spidery and in really dense maps, almost a moire pattern of connections. And then the maps are navigable. You can mouse over anything and you can see what the site is. You can reorient the map by clicking on the map on any node and see the map in the context of that one node and as compared to the one that you typed in originally. So the map is very malleable. We also have a thing called the Feng Shuianator that reorganizes the map around which sites are most densely connected of all the sites you're looking at. So there's different ways to, you know, explore this data.
And finally,
you can double-click on anything in the map, and it'll open the site. So we hope it becomes kind of a browsing tool.
Oh, okay. Well, now, the sites that are available at the 1 degree, you know, so you basically have the target site at the middle of this circle.
Right.
And then in the outer perimeter at the at 1 degree is all the sites that are actually linking to your site as the target site? Is that what
to,
it is?
To and from.
To and from. Okay.
Yeah. So what we're doing, and this is also, I think, you know, people will probably think it works a little too slowly right off the bat. But we don't take this kind of we looked at everything and now we can tell you all about it approach that Google or Technorati does, because we don't really think that that's giving you that deep a view of the data in the first place, because all of these systems are really only looking at, you know, 10% or 50% of the subject matter that they claim to describe. And so my voice has just suddenly changed because you did something to it on the mixing board.
I just turned you up a little bit because you were a little quiet.
The whole idea of the map and the ability to go 2 degrees out is that when you tell us you want to know about something, we start looking at that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So once that URL is in there, that map will continue to get richer and richer.
Oh, really?
And so every 12 hours, you know, is what we're doing as a default right now. It'll go out and look at the whole map again, and then find all the new inner relationships and or interconnections between those sites. Now, all of that is this way because we wanted to show we could do it so that we can partner with people to do interesting things and map people's services and sites and things like that. That, you know, because there are, Amazon may want to show you the relationship between books in your recommendation list, and we'd like to be able to do that. Or we'd like to be able to show who on LinkedIn is connected to one another visually so that you can think, you know, if I'm going to aim a request on LinkedIn, which is a business connection service, I'm going to do it through this route because it looks like I'll get more out of it. I know more people in between here and there, or it's a shorter route, which would increase the chance you're going to get a return. The other thing is there's just a ton of companies out there that connect people and need to be able to show that value. And so they might need this kind of mapping, and we have an enterprise tool that is much richer than what you see on MyDensity that can show you the strength of relationships between sites based on how many times they connect, and you can. There's a lot of ways you can cut this data, and MyDensity is a free service and will never be charged. You know, people will not be charged for it. It's starting off on a shoestring, so it may be a little slow right now, but we're hoping we can raise some money and make it better. And the other thing to know is that we will never collect any personal data about anybody. That is, you know, if you come search on a map, we're never going to know it was you, and we're never going to, you know, say, wow, we can say now that Rob is really interested in sites about teenage girls. So we think we're doing something that's pretty unique, and we hope that a lot of people like and want to come back and use in a lot of different ways.
So when you actually go to mydensity.com, you actually enter your URL, and you really what you're doing is you're submitting your URL for indexing.
Yeah.
Essentially is what you're doing. So
for mapping.
So if you don't get an instant result back, it's only because the system is processing all
the
links.
Yeah, it could be for a number of reasons. It could be that we're real busy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, believe me, this is coming right out of my pocket, and I'm trying to put as much computer processing power into it as I can, but there's going to be a limit to begin with. But if you have a really large map, like, for instance, the map of the first 2 degrees around my blog has about 14,000 nodes in it. Mm-hmm. And if we find that you've got a really dense map and you've never seen your URL before, it's going to start crawling through all that.
Yep.
And because we're looking at a site or so a second, and you know, may turn it up to 8 sites a second, but even if you're, you know, you do the math and you've got 12,000 links, it's going to take a while to find everything.
So the longer that URL is in the system, the more complete the map is going to
be. Yeah, so every time you come back, it'll be richer and you'll see more of it. But, you know, at the beginning, it may kind of be flattering to think, gosh, they really do have to go find everything. Mm-hmm. At least I hope that's the reaction people will have.
So is it triggered off of links that are available off of your website right now? So it basically uses that as a starting gate.
Right.
And then it just branches out from there.
Right. And basically it goes out from the sites that it is pointing to. Mm-hmm. We look at that one and look at all of those sites. But then we also do other things like hit Google and get a list of the links pointing into it and then integrate that in and then do more as we go out on all those other nodes on the site in the map. And so we get a pretty comprehensive view of the relationships really quickly. I mean, some of the things you'll find now is that there's a lot of stuff you never realized is connecting to you because it just never pops up. And you'll also see, you know, one of the things we want to do to improve the service right off the bat is start filtering out all of the trackbacks from spammers and things like that so that you get cleaner and cleaner maps that show you more of the information that's actually relevant. But this is all stuff that we're working on, and we'll, you know, roll out as quickly as we can. But we wanted to get this out there and show people we can do it.
Yeah, it seems like that the physical mapping representation that displays is a little bit of a challenge, I would think, for you to display every possible link relationship that could exist, especially in a really dense site.
That's where the feng shui-inator comes in.
It actually gets kind of cool
because with a really dense map, like Doc Searle's website, if you feng shui-inate it, which is a checkbox that lets the map reorganize itself around the core connections. And so you get these kind of, you know, very lightly connected ones at the edge, and you get this dense mass in the middle. Mm-hmm. But the dense mass is where if you start you can zoom in or zoom out on these maps. If you start really getting in there and mousing over, you find all sorts of interesting relationships. The other thing is that whenever you're mousing over a site, all of the active links to and from that site within the larger map are illuminated in a different color so that mm-hmm. you can see the map within the map.
Okay.
And so we're really, you know, it's exploratory. It's, I don't know, you know, the first thing we're going to have to do is change it. I'll guarantee you. But hopefully it works.
This is like the first rendition of it. And then I would think it would kind of the next stage would be kind of contextual relationships. What is being discussed? What type of topics or those kind of things? Is that kind of the next level?
Well, the next level is really to get enterprise customers who say, I'd like to be able to take my data mm-hmm. that I have about whether it's my customers or my customers' relationships or the market that I write about or whatever, and build maps so they can represent those things, which would be contextual. I mean, what is everybody who's, you know, writing about Boston Legal saying? What is everybody who's writing about Apple, you know, and what's the relationships between them? With MyDensity, because it's a free service, the thing we're thinking about is whether or not we want to have more and more capability into these free maps, which, you know, frankly, unless we raise a lot of money and do other things, can't afford to do right now. Or we might do something like MyDensity Pro, which would be, you know, would have extra features. Yeah. And, you know, show me contextual relationships, show me the strength of ties, because that's one thing we can already do, but we don't do in this because These maps are already pretty dense when you get a very large site. What we might be able to do is say, show me only the nodes that are in the top 20% in terms of strength of relationships. And if you know anything about, you know, these social networking theories, that's where most information travels around. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is that the most important connections are the weakest ones, where it just where you get these bridging people that connect different communities, different dense communities, which are strongly connected.
So is it kind of like niche type bloggers that are into very niche areas?
Well, that's an example.
Maybe have a significant influence over a pretty significant group of people that have a particular interest.
Yeah, that's an example. And what I've been talking about a little bit is, you know, there's this idea of the long tail, mm-hmm. which is an article by Chris Anderson, who's the editor of Wired, and he talks about power laws, which are a widely known natural phenomenon where basically the most successful sites or the most successful people, Bill Gates has a lot more money than everybody else, mm-hmm. and Glenn Reynolds of Instapundit has a lot more links. And so mm-hmm. they're at the top of the curve. And out in this long tail, there are, you know, millions or hundreds of millions of different nodes and different things that Anderson says can be sold.
Well, now when we talk about nodes, we're talking about people that are out there that are contributing content to
or sites
to the network or bloggers.
Right.
It could be bloggers, right?
Well, I mean, think about just it can be people, it can be sites. And the interesting thing is you think about the relationship between, I mean, most bloggers have more than one blog now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you
or
they're
blogging in more than one place.
Right, yeah, right. So if you could say, well, you know, I'd like to know where this blogger I'd like to know when I'm seeing the same blogger. And if you mapped that, mm-hmm. that'd be another way for you to look into that long tail. Because I don't think it's a long tail which treats everybody as in relation to Bill Gates. Because, frankly, Bill Gates is irrelevant to almost all of our lives economically, except when we have to buy Windows.
Well, and Bill Gates doesn't have a blog, so
I'm not talking about blogs.
No,
I'm talking about power laws. Okay,
so
let me make the point. So the long tail is this kind of two-dimensional view mm-hmm. of anything. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we live in a really, you know, densely interesting world where there are, you know, we're surrounded by thousands of power laws, not one that mm-hmm. defines everything. And if you really think about it as thousands of power laws, what it looks like is the Badlands. There's a lot of peaks and a lot of valleys and gullies, and there's flat land in between where there's a lot of people as well. And understanding when you're looking at a person who is on a peak and seeing that they almost always point to somebody down in this little gully right here when they're mm-hmm. talking about a particular issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, say, for instance, you want to find a way to get somebody to pay attention to PC bus speeds. Okay, you know, like a New York Times writer. Mm-hmm. If you know that before that New York Times writer ever writes about it, almost invariably this guy down in the gully posts about how he's been testing bus speeds and this guy picks up on it. The most important node, going back to the idea of a weak node, is the guy in the gully mm-hmm. because he's the key influencer for this peak writer who has a lot of traffic but is – getting a lot of traffic because they aggregate lots of different ideas.
Okay. So maybe that smaller level blogger or whatever occasionally comes up with a really groundbreaking idea. And
right.
there's millions of those people out there that have ideas but maybe aren't considered to be the top blogger. But they still can contribute to the network.
Well, but you see, it's not about justifying their existence. What it is, it's about the fact that these relationships are relatively permanent things. We've looked to different sources that we rely on. Mm-hmm. If you can find those unknown sources who influence very influential people, then you know more about how to get the idea to the influential people.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the idea of the long tail, there's Anderson puts out these rules, and he says, you know, basically make everything easily accessible. The idea that he points at every song on iTunes has been sold at least once. Okay, so put it all out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, putting it all out there is not necessarily the way to create a business success, but putting it out there and knowing how to then make it known mm-hmm. that this stuff is in a particular place by looking at it as a topological map rather than this long curve where there's this vast undifferentiated tail.
Mm-hmm.
is, I think, the key to doing business in the long-tail world. So what we're talking about is a transition from thinking about a long tail to a broad topology where you've got markets for information and you've got topologies of political relationships. If you could look at a map that not only showed you the topic you were looking at, like, say, for instance, Social Security crisis, but you could look at the money relationship between the bloggers who say it's a crisis and the think tanks who they refer to and where those think tanks get their money and the ones who say it's not a crisis and where those think tanks get their money. You can start looking at the relationship and power in the media by saying, there's this overwhelming wave of people who – are funded by conservative think tanks who then write blogs or point to bloggers who point to them. And that means to me that this is not necessarily completely accurate information. It's propaganda. So when you start looking at maps in a lot of different ways, when you look at it as a topology of relationships, you can start to do really interesting, intuitive things. You know, at a glance, you get a better sense of a lot more information to make judgments about the information you're making a decision about. Now, and
that makes sense.
We're really, 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 really early in this. Not just our company, but the internet.
Well, in the concepts that you're actually trying to pull out of the network right now are so new. From the standpoint of people understanding the interconnections of all these contributors. And then another piece that really popped into my head there for a second as you were explaining that is the whole influence of comments on blogs and how different people can influence other blogs based on comments, not necessarily blogs themselves. But it almost seems like comments are just as relevant as
– or more so.
As a blog.
Yeah.
Or as a blog entry.
Yeah.
Are you guys looking at the influencers when you get down to that kind of granular level ultimately, or is
– Well, we can, but not in this system.
This system, yeah. Okay.
Not in my density, in this service. And what we're building is a back end that can do all of this stuff. I mean, if we could be as big and as well-funded as Google, that would be the kind of stuff I would be focused on. Because if one blog posting generates 100 responses, and you can also characterize the responses as positive or negative.
Yeah, if you can apply some contextual relationships between the person making the post and what the person is commenting on somehow.
Right.
Then you can kind of get a flavor for what the opinion of the community is of that particular blog post as
right.
well.
And most the thing is, these are all public acts of and there's a lot of information associated with them. And it's when you get into trackbacks and you can then go back and look at the other blog that where the trackback is coming from, you get a real sense of, why they might be saying what they're saying in this particular posting. And so, this is so far out in the future.
It is. Yeah.
But I hope that, that what we're doing is making something. It's now. It's here.
Yeah,
it's Charlie. But I hope that what we're building is something that we can use to make these kind of quick assessments of all this information we're being bombarded with. And, the way I've described it is right now that we can see a couple of feet, 5 feet into the depth of data, this ocean that we're being slowly covered with and we're swimming through. And, it's easy to spot a whale in the ocean because they come up to the top 5 feet and they blow the spout and then they go back down underwater. And those are the kinds of things that we talk about when we talk about A-list bloggers or mainstream media. It's easy to see the whales. But everybody out there is shrimp, plankton, or otherwise. They're all small. And trying to get a better view so that you understand the relationship of the small things or the fact that somebody who appears to be small – about a lot of things, but when it comes to the thing they care about most is a whale.
Or they're also growing rapidly in their influence.
Right. And that's, in the long term, that's the persuadio vision. So, go check out my density. You'll see it work. And then we're going to do more.
Well, and you're going to be coming back hopefully to talk more about it as you're developing it over time. And
I hope to have the time.
Yes, Lyle. That's... I'm hoping that you have the time, too. I mean, you've been doing this with us for, 5 years now? So
no, longer than that.
Has it been? Or does it just seem
seven,
that long?
It's seven. I think it's almost 7 years.
Almost 7 years. I know. It's a long time.
And I've always found time for you, Rob.
Yes, you have, Mitch.
I will come back.
I appreciate that.
I will always come back. But I thought we were going to talk about something else.
We are. We are. One of the discussions that's kind of popped up online, which is kind of interesting, we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but because we wanted to spend as much time as we could with Mitch, because his little application is extremely cool. But
little? It is not little. It is large.
It's growing. As every person goes in and submits their URL, his database gets larger, that's for sure.
You would not believe how fast it's growing.
But there's been some discussion that Google may be building a internet operating system. Now, I know there's some discussion out there of perspective on this because what an internet application is, or an internet operating system, I should say, is something that's never really existed before. So I'm not sure that we entirely understand the definition of it, but let's talk about it a little bit, Mitch. Is it possible that with web-based thin client type hosted environments, which it seems like that the technology industry is moving very quickly towards and talking a lot about, is basically hosting applications on central servers and making them available as services to
I mean, I just described a web service to you in Persuadio,
yeah.
But at the same time, I think that the whole operating system analogy is the wrong one. Mm-hmm. An operating system manages a lot of resources, physical resources as well as logical resources. Mm-hmm. And Google is never going to address the physical resources either on the desktop or on the network for the most part because, I don't know whether anybody's noticed, but Cisco built that part of the network.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to use all this. They're going to sit on top of it. But it is always going to be an application layer. It's not going to be an OS. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, yes, absolutely, you're going to see a lot of hosted services. I don't think that means that Google is going to organize everything because Google only looks at, 8 to 10% of all the data on the mm-hmm. web now anyway because, I mean, frankly, it's a huge, huge problem to, mm-hmm. to do more than that. And if you then include all the stuff that is on every hard drive – all over the world. I mean, you're talking about Google currently looking at something less than 1% of all the data in the world.
Well, I think that raises an interesting question is the aspect of storage. And typically with an operating system on your PC, that's always linked up with some sort of storage mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the discussion has been out there that Google's going to be another like a massive storage repository of all of our personal files. And I just don't see that happening.
I don't either. I mean, we were talking before the show about the fact that you've got almost a terabyte of storage in just the PC we're recording on. And, if I had a grid in my home, mm-hmm. I'd have about 2 terabytes of storage. I don't know how many teraflops of processing power.
And it's cheap.
Yeah, cheap.
I bought a 400-gig hard drive for $200 about a month ago.
Yeah. The only problem is organizing all that data.
Oh, well, yeah.
Now, and so, the other thing is that there's a lot of replication in all of the stuff that's stored around.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you might, I think that some people try to rationalize the idea that there's going to be this storage in the sky with the idea that we're going to get rid of all the extra copies and everyone will get their own copy of this. But that's just not a very realistic view because, we do things with our copies. If you pull a book off of many people's shelves, it's filled with notes.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a Word file and 10 different people have worked on it, you've got 10 different files. But mm-hmm. no, if 10 different people have worked on the file and made comments about each other's work and then submitted changes, you actually have 100 or more copies of that because of different changes that have happened.
Sounds like a wiki to me.
Well, it sounds like the kind of a problem that a collaborative environment like a wiki might reduce, but it
mm-hmm.
will not resolve ever,
mm-hmm.
ever.
That is certainly true. I mean, the discussion that's been circling around Google and this internet operating system is really based on the fact that they're creating all of these kind of web services, the Gmail and they've done the whole desktop search thing, and they're integrating in with the Windows operating system more and more all the time. And it just seems like a natural extension for them to kind of take it to the next level and try and offer these applications. I mean, they could easily develop a similar application that's a word processor, Excel spreadsheet, those kind of things that could operate very similar to the Maps application that Google has developed now.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the Maps application takes data and presents it
mm-hmm.
collecting data from users and making them making it possible for them to present the data the way they want to. Because, you know, one of the problems with wikis is that once you get done with a file, you still haven't got anything that looks like you want it to for business purposes.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I mean, look, I'm on the board of advisors of SocialTech, so I should just say that as a disclosure.
Sure.
I like the wiki work style, but the wiki is only one step of a long process between creation and presentation that I think Google would be getting out of a lot of their core competency to try to address. You know, that said, these are all great things, but I think the whole purpose of Google's expanding businesses is to collect more information about us, our interests, where we are, who we want, you know, to meet with, and to try to make those connections. And that, you know, who we want to meet with is who we want to buy stuff from.
Well, and also I also think that a lot of this interest in creating web-based applications is another way for the software companies to get more control over the licensing of their software as well. So there's less risk of them with piracy as well.
Yeah, there is that. But I think from Google's perspective, it's all about driving AdWords inventory value.
Yeah, with Google, if you look at this whole web-based application thing in regards to Microsoft, you can really see that.
Well, look at the Groove app acquisition last week. You know, Microsoft bought Groove Networks, which is a collaborative work tool. It's a Windows-only collaborative work tool, and I think it's really kind of telling that they went out and bought something 2 or 3 weeks after Bill said, you know, it's all about interoperability and us, you know, making sure that our systems work with everything else. They went out and they bought a web-based, Windows-only collaboration environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like saying, well, you know, we're under siege, so we're going to build the walls higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so our people can't get out. That, I think, is
that's the mistake.
That's going the other way.
Yeah, it is, most definitely.
So, I think, you know, Google, as long as they keep driving more AdWords inventory and they can get better targeting fees, their business is going to grow.
Yeah, I think so too. And Google is sitting in a much better position, I think, in the long run than Microsoft in developing this stuff because of just the relationship that they have with the user right now is so much better, I think.
Yes and no. I think Microsoft is under attack on a number of fronts. Microsoft has an awful resiliency.
Yes, well, they do because they got big pockets, deep pockets.
Deep pockets, and they you know, they're very good at taking stuff invented by other people and making it commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they launched MSN Spaces in 6 or 8 weeks. They had 2 million bloggers.
Yeah.
So they roughly added a quarter to the total market in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And while Google is going to be very good at launching a lot of this stuff, you should never discount a monopolist position in the market and its ability to take and integrate a vaguely acceptable version of really cool stuff and making most people happy. I mean, the problem for most of us, you know, most of us geeks who love all this stuff, is that we think that the design and development of the technology is the first thing, and usually it's the packaging and the marketing of the things that really drives the success.
Well, and Microsoft actually has been taking some criticism lately about their marketing. They were known for many, many years as a leader in online marketing, offline marketing as well. But I think things have changed.
Well, yeah, and I think it's good that things change. And I'm not defending Microsoft at all. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I remember thinking that they were dead when the internet came along, and they did manage to turn the company and address the internet. It didn't do a whole heck of a lot of good for anybody but Microsoft.
They've certainly put a lot of effort into internet search, and it seems like they're making good progress with that. It seems like it just may be difficult for them because Google's got such a good lead, and Yahoo's always been doing such a terrific job with all that as well.
Well, look, I mean, Yahoo just this week introduced this Yahoo 360, which starts to combine the mail and the picture service and the other things that they do. And in terms of packaging, and, you know, also in terms of just raw profitability, Yahoo is a more successful company than Google.
Yeah.
And Yahoo may be the one who takes and makes a lot of these innovations that are going on at Google into really, you know, marketplace success stories.
Yeah. And Yahoo, I keep hearing, is striving to be a media company, too.
Which is kind of
interesting when you think about what they're doing in the big picture.
I actually don't quite agree with that. I mean, I know that's a kind of an underpinning theory.
They wanted to do that for years now, too.
But I also think that people are projecting onto the company their expectations about the CEO, Terry Semel, who came from Hollywood. And he mm-hmm. came from Hollywood with a very, you know, specific purpose in mind, and that was, how do we better work with people who have content, not to be the content company, but to be more like the television network that is in between you and the viewer if you've got content.
Well, you start thinking about the future over the next 5 or 6 years and beyond with IPTV, and mm-hmm. you can really start seeing how these companies, Google and Yahoo, might be able to evolve themselves into kind of an entertainment platform as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing is, Google would have to fundamentally change its way of dealing with people. And right now, we are nothing but a search field, a list of results, and some ads, you know, because that's what Google is.
Yeah.
Contextual ads that, you know, are related to what you're interested in. That's a very strikingly different way of media consumption. And I think it's going to win some people, and it's not going to, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. when I think about, you know, the way a lot of people rely on TV Guide to get through all of the extra stuff that they are, you know, they can get on in a many channel universe as compared to the 3 or 5 channel one of 10, 15, 20
yeah.
years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to point to Yahoo being the more successful company.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. Well, let's talk a little bit about some listener emails that we've gotten. We got an email from Dan Daniels, who wrote us, I love your podcast, but find the bitrate a little too low for my player and iPod. And I guess it chirps a little bit for him when he plays back our show at 32K. So he's asking us whether or not we're willing to increase the bitrate of our MP3 file to 64K or 48K. And I'd say, you know, I might be open to doing that.
Well, no, I think that Dan wants a commitment from you.
I think he does, too.
Now, are you going to do it?
I think I'd probably go to 48K. I don't think I'd go to 64.
I think that's a good choice.
Yeah, because I don't think that you're going to get a huge difference in the quality between 48 and 64.
I agree, but I think you will probably eliminate the chirping.
Yes, going from 32 to 48?
Yes.
That's probably just enough bytes per second.
So, Dan, there you go. There's your answer. There's the commitment.
You've made an impact on the Web Talk Radio show and the quality of our presentation. I appreciate that.
You know, this is actual interactivity in action.
Yes, it is.
Wow,
yes, it
this is cool. This is Dan, a two-way medium.
Dan, thank you very much for the comment. I've actually thought about this before, but, you know, I'm selfishly concerned about how big your memory card is.
Okay, so I want to read the next one.
Okay.
Okay, so this one's from Brad. Brad doesn't have a last name.
Brad didn't give me a last name.
Okay.
I think there's a reason for that.
I really enjoy your show. How come it's getting shorter, the show? Regarding your show with Mr. York, seems the TV shows are all based on ratings, and the shows should be open to any means of getting more eyeballs via download and viewed by a bigger audience. Brad, P.S., is there a glitch in the move to ditch Mitch?
I didn't know there was a move to ditch Mitch.
I didn't, and frankly, I'm not too particularly troubled by it. But then Brad goes on to say, I've switched to liking Mitch. Thank you, Brad.
Yes, thank you.
But
thank you.
Can you just address the question? Because I'm acting as interlocutor on behalf of your emailers today.
Oh.
Why is the show getting shorter?
The show's getting shorter because that's the feedback I've gotten from listeners. They wanted to have a 30-minute version of our show.
Yeah, but according to this, they wanted to ditch Mitch, too.
Well, that's true, and people change their mind.
They do.
Yes, they do.
So, those crazy kids.
Yes. So a 30-minute show is what you're getting right now. We're just producing two shows a week instead of just one show a week.
So that's actually an hour a week.
It actually, if you count this show,
it's going to be
an hour and a half a week.
So, well, there you go.
Yeah. So that's okay.
You're getting more and more,
yeah,
Brad.
That's right. Well, and that's what could happen with a internet-only distribution. I'm not conforming to structured radio breaks anymore.
I think that Brad could probably establish a meaningful relationship, not just move from liking,
right,
disliking to liking.
This isn't talk that you're going to hear on broadcast radio
that's
anymore.
Right.
So
you cannot hear this kind of talk on broadcast radio.
No, you cannot. And as far as your comment about the TV shows being more available as a download and getting a bigger audience, we 100% agree with that. There just needs to be some way for those content providers to figure out a way to monetize that. And that's the big hurdle that's left for the Hollywood to figure out. So
not Hollywood.
Not well.
Somebody else is going to figure that
somebody
out.
Somebody like who?
Maybe people who have been in television. Maybe people who have been in radio.
Or is it somebody that maybe is developing the format, the file formats or something
there
like that?
There can be all sorts of answers to these questions.
That's true.
That would be a fine thing for us to talk about, but some other time.
Yes, that's right. That's probably beyond the scope of this show.
That's right.
Well, Mitch, thank you for joining us on the show.
Well, thank you. And everybody, please do stop by mydensity.com. That's mydensity, like the line that Crispin Glover said in the first Back to the Future movie. When he meant to say, "You are my destiny," he said, "You are my density."
Ooh, very profound.
George McFly, 1955.
And be patient when you go to his My Density site, because it's learning more about you every minute.
Well, it's learning more about the URL you enter. It's not learning about you.
Well, that's true. It's not learning any personal information, but it's learning about, you know, people that have a relationship with your blog or something like that. So.
And I think you'll all be surprised by what you find.
I certainly was when Web Talk Radio showed up. There was a lot of interesting information in there. I appreciate that. Well, Mitch, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Web Talk Radio. That's all the time we have this week. Check back with us next week or the next show that we have coming out. Go to our website at webtalkradio.com and keep an eye on our weblog there. We keep regular posts going there, and also can keep you up to date on the shows that we have coming up. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.